This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, chapters 35 and 36, Beyond the Veil and the Only One He Ever Feared. In these chapters... death.
Everything happens in these two.
Were you spoiled about this death?
No.
I had a feeling you weren't because it's the one big one you haven't mentioned. And so I purposely said nothing.
You were good to do that because I mean, I'm still not sure I quite believe it. I'm kind of one of those people that wears the body, but I feel like it's, I don't know. Lupin made a pretty convincing case. So I didn't expect that. And I was kind of like, wait, what? No. pretty gutting.
And the most epic battle between the good wizard and the bad wizard.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot. And a lot of teases, I think, came out in this too, because, you know, somebody would get like a bit of information and then all of a sudden, you know, a battle starts. So,
indeed. And so, yeah, you know, I'm just thinking again, as we were discussing off mic, I've become very engrossed in all the book bans that are going on across the country, and it's despicable. And it's not just book bannings, but book burnings. So Earlier in February, some guy decided to burn Harry Potter books like it's 1999.
Oh my God.
And Twilight books.
Oh my God. Which is that one just does not make sense to me because there has been so much made about like the celibacy thing with Twilight. So
yeah, because Stephanie Meyer is Mormon.
Yeah, right.
And I've even heard of certain like small book burnings, like in feminist protest of the problematic elements of Twilight in some weird ass ways. Even though, again, I don't know why book burnings is protected under the First Amendment, but we can't like keep books in our library, in school libraries, under the First Amendment.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that don't make sense right now that are going on and a lot of things that are conflicting, and it's a weird world.
Again, so there was, as early as February of this year, you know, so someone was burning Harry Potter books again. Surprisingly, no one is trying in all the, you know, Excel sheets I printed out from Pen America, their index of book challenges. No one's trying to get rid of Harry Potter again in schools.
Well, that's good. That's kind of pathetic.
Yeah, because that's not the agenda. The agenda is LGBTQI and racism, not so much, those are far greater threats to society to them right now than the potential of witches like me, taking over the world.
Yeah. Did you see Margaret Atwood made that?
Yes, because her book is on there, and literally to protest, she created the inflammable Handmaid's Tale, and her picture of this old lady with a flame torch with the book, and it was so badass.
It is badass. Maybe we need some unburnable Harry Potter books, but Handmaid's Tale is pretty. That's pretty cool. So.
Yeah. Which was heavily inspired by my husband's home country of Iran and what they do to women.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No. But anyway, so for now, at least Harry Potter seems to be safe-ish, at least in libraries, but still there are some wackos who want to burn it, even in 2022. But chapter 35, Beyond the Veil.
Beyond the Veil.
So who did you, when you first like let this, you know, at the end of our last episode, you know, it says, you know, bring me the prophecy, turn around nice and slowly. Who did you think that was and how did you react to see who it was?
I think the kind of looking at the pages left for the book, you kind of think it's going to be, or I kind of thought it was going to be the big bad. I thought it was going to be Voldemort or somebody Voldemort adjacent. And I guess we could argue that Malfoy is, because he's Death Eater. But kind of, you know, I think the game that we play with the Malfoys is like, there are Death Eaters, but maybe they're, you know, it's kind of like maybe we don't know. So this is just confirmation. And was I surprised it was Malfoy? Yeah, I was. So scary.
Yeah. So Malfoy's there and he's not alone. There's like half a dozen, if not a dozen Death Eaters with him, all pointed their wands at these six teenagers.
Oh my God. It's the book banning in the wizarding world. Like, what are we doing here with our...
Yeah. So, well, I feel like Order of the Phoenix, another reason why it's one of my favorite books, because I think it definitely goes to show that, you know, as a kid, you naturally think that all adults, like, even if they're maybe not doing the best things, have the best intentions and are not willfully trying to harm you in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, with the ministry, with Umbridge, and then in this case, you know, with this terrorist group, like, we very much see that, no, there are adults who just will do terrible shit to you and do not give a fuck.
Yeah, and I think directing that malice toward, like, kids, or, you know, teenagers, it just seems odd, but I guess it's not that uncommon.
So Harry's like, where is Sirius? And the Death Eaters start laughing.
And they call him out on his hero complex, which he does have one.
He does have, like, again, not that he doesn't have one. I think it's unfair the way it's been framed, both by Ron in Goblet of Fire and also by Hermione, who should have been emotionally intelligent enough to not frame it in that way, in Harry's state of mind. But, you know, psychologically, you totally get why. And they even, you know, this clearly was very thought out, because Harry, at Hermione's insistence, made the effort to, you know, check Grimmauld Place first.
Yeah.
So if Sirius wasn't there and Sirius wasn't in Grimmauld Place, then where the fuck was he?
Right. Yeah. So he was not where they thought he should be. But, you know, I don't know if that was like, well, I don't know. But they kind of, you know, they definitely used his kind of affection for Sirius against him. And then they're complete dicks about it.
Yeah. And there's this woman who keeps saying in this little baby voice, little baby woke up frightened and thought his dream was true.
Ugh. I don't throw up.
Yes, that is the psychotic Bellatrix Lestrange. What were your thoughts about finally meeting Bellatrix Lestrange in person?
So I always thought, like, her aesthetic was cool. Mm-hmm. I know that's very surface level, but, like, I just kind of like, I mean, we're gothic lit fans. I like her kind of gothic aesthetic very much. But she's a dick. Like, I don't like her at all. I thought she might be kind of fun. No, I don't like her at all.
Or if you thought she would be a bit more like regal, like Lucius Malfoy in some capacity, or...
You know, I don't really know what I expected. Maybe a little less, maybe a little more British in the kind of, maybe a little more witty. I thought she'd be a little more
caustic.
Yeah, a little more interesting and fun. Instead, she's just, I just... Don't
or maybe or maybe a little her. More scathing like Snape, but she's just totally off rails.
She really is. She's got one mission and that's all she cares about. And it's like, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so they get to a point where it's like, give us the prophecy. And so Harry realized that, you know, this little orby thingy is a prophecy. And they try to summon it by magic, but Harry clings to it. And they're, you know, they finally realize, you know, Lucius is like, you know, we don't, like, you know, you don't curse him until we get the prophecy. And so Harry realizes, okay, like, they're not willing to immediately attack us because they're scared of losing this.
I was going to call this chapter Give Me the Prophecy, because I feel like Lucius says that like a million times. But
yeah, well, and it's just interesting because, again, Lucius is just in an adult form, like not even adult mentally, really, like just a entitled Draco in an adult body where he's not used to people not capitulating to him immediately.
Right. Yeah. He is very upset, especially, I'm sure, because it's Harry. I mean, it's always more upsetting that it's Harry.
Yes. And so he's like, why do you want this so badly? And they are surprised. Like, they think Harry knows exactly what this is. And they realize Dumbledore hasn't told him shit.
Yeah, there are a couple of things. And I reread this because I'm like, maybe I missed something. But, I think we're getting there. That he doesn't know it. And then they start talking about his scar.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the age-old question of Lucius says, don't you want to know why the Dark Lord wanted to kill you as a baby? Because Harry asked that at the end of Philosopher's Stone to Dumbledore, and Dumbledore's like, I can't tell you that yet. You're too young.
And we still don't know, right? Unless I did not read something.
No, you don't know yet.
Okay. I was like, oh God, I over.
And in these exchanges, you know, Harry is using Voldemort's name, and Bellatrix is incensed by that. She's like, shut your mouth. You dare speak his name with your unworthy list. You dare besmirch it with your half-blood tongue. And Harry's just like, don't you know that he's half-blood? His mother was a witch, but his dad was a muggle. Or has he been telling you he's pure blood?
Yeah, Harry is like, Harry's over it. I also thought this was an interesting way to kind of, you know, so many of the folks in the wizarding world are like, don't say Voldemort because it's like saying a curse. But for her, it was like, don't put, you know, keep his name out
Do
of
not
your
speak
mouth.
The Lord's name in vain.
Right. I was...
Don't speak the Dark Lord's name in vain.
Exactly. So she's like, oh my gosh, how dare you? And I just thought it was kind of a...
She literally tries to stun him. Like, she has no focus. Like,
yeah.
And I never really thought about it this way because, obviously, you know, I'm not really giving anything away here, but, like, Bellatrix is really the only prominent female Death Eater from what is otherwise appearing to be a very patriarchal, misogynistic group. And what does it say? That the one female is completely psychotic.
Yeah.
Not that the others aren't evil in their own way, but she's just like, whee!
They're a little more methodical, and she's just kind of off the rails. Crazy woman. How original.
Yeah, the crazy, nasty woman.
Yeah.
So, Dumbledore never told you the reason you bear the scar was hidden in the bowels of the Department of Mysteries, Lucius goes on to explain that the only people who can pick up a prophecy, this little glass sphere, is the people for whom it was made, for whom that it was prophesized for. So that means that the only people who can touch it is Harry himself and Lord Voldemort, which is why all the people they tried to, like, manipulate and jinx into coercing them into taking the thing. That's why they all got screwed up, and that's why that guy, you know, got killed in the hospital wing, because they originally cursed him trying to get him to do it, and then he got screwed up because he touched it when he's not supposed to and it backfired. So what was your thought about that little point?
Very nuanced and very, like, then you do have to take a person by force, and I'm, you know, and Voldemort wants to know what's in this, but he doesn't want to be the, like...
Yeah, like, he is not willing to just go, as Bellatrix says, like, you know, strut about, like, the ministry.
Right. He's not going to lower himself to that. It's kind of like...
No, yeah, he won't lower himself to that. And Harry's like, oh, so he makes you come in here and do his dirty work. And during all this keeping them talking, he's telling, like, the others, like, smash the shelves.
Right. Yeah. He's trying to, like, make sure he gets that message, because we're kind of getting, almost going to get some information possibly. And then everything.
And then Harry screams now. And everything goes smashing and they start running. So there's a lot of action naturally in this English. I didn't know how much in detail you wanted to go through it.
I mean, there is a lot of action, a lot of curses back and forth, a lot of, you know, or spells.
Yeah.
All the things are happening. I just imagined like mass chaos in this.
Yeah. It's mass chaos. They're separated where it's now just Harry, Hermione, and Neville, and Ron, Luna, and Ginny are somewhere else. Now all the Death Eaters have split up as well. It seems Lucius seems to be the leader amongst all of them. And so they get, so some of the Death Eaters come in and like, you know, they're show, you know, they're curses at each other, and then one of them even says like Avada, like starts to say like the killing curse. So there's like, yeah, this shit is starting to get real.
Yeah.
It wasn't already real beforehand.
Right. We're taking it to the next level though.
Yep. And then so it's, who is it? Oh yeah, one of the Death Eaters comes in and they're in the time room with all the grandfather clocks and all these hourglasses, and so there's a point where, you know, one of the shelves smashes and then it just like redoes itself like in time, because again, it's experimenting with time. And then the guy who gets like smashed into the shelf, like his head gets turned into a baby's because it's that time.
That was so creepy.
Yeah. Like, so yeah, like tell me about that.
That was like, I think that we've talked a lot about, you know, the kind of like gothic elements, but the kind of that kind of borderlines on the grotesque and the absurd, you know, with this man with a baby head.
And Hermione pulls Harry back and is like, you can't hurt a baby.
I was like, Hermione, come on, it's not really a baby. We're not going to do the would you kill baby Hitler thing here.
We're not.
Like, yeah, I mean, I'm not. But I kind of thought, I was like, Hermione, come on. Like, it's a baby's head. It's not even a baby body. But.
Yeah. So, and then that, so that was a different Death Eater. But then they, you know, one of the other Death Eaters is on their trail and the mask gets ripped away. And Harry realizes from the Daily Prophet that it's Dolohov. And he slashes like the air with his wand, and these purple, this like whip that like a with purple flames, and it passes right across Hermione's chest, and then she just collapses onto the floor.
Ugh, yeah, we almost lost Hermione.
Yeah, how would you feel if we had lost Hermione? Like, you just would have been like, I'm done.
I was trying to kill her in book one. No, I mean that's a bummer, but you know, it's kind of like that. It's interesting because there was a big death coming, and I think it was going to be Hermione? I mean, I know. Had I read these books when Harry Potter was like, you know, when we didn't have two more books to go, maybe I would think she was going to be gone, but I know she sticks around. So that was the only reason I was like, all right, yeah, she's going to be okay.
Yep. And so they get rid of, so they incapacitate Dolohov, shall we say. And it's like, you know, they still feel a pulse on her, even though she's unconscious. And Neville's nose is just completely broken.
Yeah. And he has a hard time speaking the rest of this chapter.
Yep. And then they go out and they finally meet up with Ron, Ginny, and Luna. Where were they? They were in like the astrolabe, like with the astronomy stuff. And they were like floating in space. And they had a few Death Eaters on their hill, and they like blew up Pluto in their face.
This was weird because I had a dream like very similar to where I had not read this yet. So this is very weird that I like reached out of something and touched like one of the planets, which whatever, that's what a dream is. But so I'm reading this and I'm like, what the hell is going on? So Ron is like completely loopy too at this
point. You know what, Ron, did you ever watch Avatar The Last Airbender?
I did not. No.
Well, there's one for listeners who are Avatar fans. Like, if you remember, like, the desert episode in season 2 where Sokka drinks the trippy cactus juice and starts hallucinating. And, you know, very giggly and very, like, you know, very, like, super, super high on this cactus juice. That's basically what Ron is making me think of right now.
That's funny. Yeah, definitely, because of course we're in this very tense time and he's like just, you know, off the rails.
Yeah. And Ginny's ankle seems to be broken or at least sprained.
Yeah. She's a little stubborn about it too.
Yeah. And Luna, I think, what does it say that in this chaos, like they say, again, not that I think she's like lying or like putting on a farce or anything by pretending to just, you know, but you know, I think she's very aware of everything, I feel like.
Yeah, she kind of seemed like, I was going to say like a Sagittarius, which is probably not right, but she just seems very kind of like.
Yeah, so because she's the only, because, you know, she's the only one who doesn't appear to be injured and you know, didn't get herself mixed up in lots of shit.
Yeah.
Because it's like Harry's, you know, well, Harry at the moment seems to be fine, but Hermione's unconscious, Neville's nose is broken. Ron is high and Ginny's ankle is broken and she's the only one that seems to have her shit together.
Which I guess, you know, if I'm pretty sure Luna's like on the good side, obviously, but I guess it could, I kind of thought, well, this kind of, it's kind of suspect that she's okay.
Mm, interesting. And of course, Ron had to throw out a Uranus joke.
Of course. You can't talk about the planets and not do that, I guess.
So. But I wasn't thinking, but this is in the 90s where Pluto is still a planet.
Oh, it still is to me.
Pluto. It still is to me. And obviously, Pluto is still very much a, you know, figure of, you know, mystical force in astrology still. So no one ever took it away in astrology. But yeah.
I'm totally happy that Pluto's still a planet. And or at least it is in our minds, so that's good.
Yep. And then it's Bellatrix Lestrange. There they are.
And they're shooting some stunning spells everywhere.
Stewing. And then they get up, seem to be apprehended. Oh, and then there's the brains.
Yeah, this was weird.
What'd you think of the brains?
Again, we're kind of like diving into the absurdist surrealism here with the brain that kind of gets Ron, basically. And we leave him there for a while. You know, it has these like tentacles. It almost becomes like an octopus kind of thing. Or am I jumping a little further?
No, I think you're right. And then what do we got? Moment they made contact with his skin, the tentacles began wrapping themselves around Ron's arm. Harry, look what's happened. No, I don't like it. No, stop. So they leave Ron to the brains. Maybe because he needs one.
Yeah, and some, maybe it'll help. We don't know. Very weird.
Yep. And then they get to a point where they've got a hold of Neville.
And poor Neville, because his like nose is smashed in, he's not really any help because he can't really articulate, you know, his spells very well.
Yeah. And Bellatrix is like, oh, it's little Longbottom. Let's see how long it is before he cracks like his parents.
This bitch. That's how I felt. I was like, God, I really did not like her in this moment.
And she tortures him.
Yeah. Like his parents, which is so, so like, oh God, that to me, that was a very gothic moment and very just gross. I don't know.
Yeah. And so Harry is about to, like, you know, finally, you know, give them the prophecy. And then boom, the cavalry shows up.
Yes, they break through. It's like such a triumphant moment, just in the nick of time, of course.
Yep, because it's Sirius, Lupin, Moody, Tonks, and Kingsley. All the people you want.
Exactly. Everybody you want there.
And so the Death Eaters become preoccupied with them because they are a substantially greater threat and much more accomplished duelists than a bunch of, even still, it's kind of shows the level of incompetence that these totally incompetent 15-year-olds could run these Death Eaters around them in this Department of Mysteries.
That's an excellent point. For as badass as these, you know, Death Eaters are supposed to be, they're kind of, they didn't just totally, you know, level the 15.
Honestly, I think Lucius would have done better if they just sent him by himself.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yep. And so, let's see, what do we got? And yeah, so they're fighting each other. And someone's got a hold of Harry and he's literally like choking him and he's like about to lose consciousness. And Neville just goes lunging out of nowhere to, you know, get the Death Eater off him.
Well, Neville is like, he's a different guy in this.
Oh,
in this
and movie. I don't know exactly, but, you know, Neville's wand snaps in half.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oof. And they say it was my father's wand.
This is something that I wonder about Harry Potter, how we can we fix wands, or once they're done, they're done? I guess because when you leave Hogwarts, like, or if you were in Azkaban, it's like your wand's broken.
No comment. That will become important later.
Okay. Well, good. It's good that I was like, did I forget something? Okay.
Yeah, because, but one example to consider is that, you know, Ron in book two, his wand was broken beyond repair and he finally broke down and got a new one.
Okay. Forgot about that.
And so we've got, so Harry and Sirius are doing battle with Dolohov again. And Sirius is like, nice one. And he's like, I want you to take Neville and the prophecy and get out of here. So Harry tries to do that. Neville's legs were still flying in every direction. They would not support him. And then out of nowhere, a man lunged at them. Both fell backward. And who is it? It's Lucius still.
Yeah.
Prophecy. Honestly, it reminds me of, is that that's all Lucius says. It's like, she is my queen in season 8 of Game of Thrones with Jon Snow.
I know. I was like, give me the prophecy. Okay. I'm glad I wasn't just being like crazy. I was like, guys, is that all the guy is going to say? Give me the prophecy, Potter, the prophecy.
Yep. And so Harry sees Neville trying to escape. And then Harry gave another suspended sleeve. Neville's robes tore along the left seam. The small spun glass ball dropped from his pocket. And before either of them could catch it, one of Neville's floundering feet kicked it. It flew some 10 feet right and smashed it on the step beneath them.
And these prophecies, I don't know if we talked about it too much, are kind of strange because they break open, somebody says something, and then it's gone.
Well, yeah, like back when, you know, when Lucius was deflecting Bellatrix's, like, stunner spell, some of them smashed and, like, pieces of the prophecy, like, kind of, like, the ghost of prophecy, like, was there for a little bit and this disappeared. But that doesn't happen in this. It just breaks.
Yeah, and I'm fingers crossed that Hermione remembered some of that. That's what I was thinking. But yeah, in this one, because it's all such chaos that it's just...
And it's like, Harry, ruined. I'm sorry, cried Neville, his face anguished. I didn't mean to. I didn't mean to.
Poor guy.
And then more cavalry. Da-da-da-da. Dumbledore,
the only cavalry you need. No, what does Harry say? He says they were saved. Like electric charge through every particle of his body, they were saved. Like, man, to have that like power and like,
yeah, because Dumbledore is just taking them all out.
Yeah,
honestly, like, it makes me think of, did you ever see Pirates of the Caribbean, the fourth one with Penelope Cruz and Ian McShane as Blackbeard?
I did not. Definitely saw the first one.
It's conflicted story-wise. You know, are they milking the franchise? But there is a scene with Blackbeard. And Blackbeard has a sort of magical ship where he can, like, control, like, you know, things that move with just his sword. And so he gets, like, the ropes to, like, grab everyone. So I kind of think of Dumbledore peeing, like, you know, with these, you know, because it says, like, it's as if he had, as though he had hooked the Death Eater with an invisible life, where he's just like flinging all these guys everywhere.
Yeah, that's funny. I need to revisit the Pirates series sometime.
Which, interesting fact, Johnny Depp won his case.
I know, and I have not fully formed all my thoughts about that case. So
it's like, again, I have a very, you know, what, there is blatant evidence of, like, you know, Amber saying, like, you know, who's going to believe you, a man? And she's screaming it at Johnny Depp, right, in a recording. So, again, I'm very skewed, not because so much I'm a Johnny Depp fan, although I am, but because, again, I am the spouse of a male victim of domestic abuse. And I know that, and there are things she did to me that were, that I'm like, oh, is she going to show up on the driveway with a baseball bat? So it's like, I know that women aren't immune to being perpetuators, and everyone's, you know, I kind of get a little miffed when it's like people saying that, oh, she's not a perfect victim, but who is? And it's like, you know, again, saying, oh, this is such a setback for Me Too. And I'm just like, if you want to be angry about this trial, then be angry with the perpetrator, you know, for making life so much worse for everyone else.
Right. I just think that both people can be wrong, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and to me, they're both did bad things. They both were had, I mean.
Yeah, both did bad things. But at the very least, you know, Johnny Depp was trying to walk away and trying to get away. And she refused to let that happen.
And that is something that.
And like, that is like, you know, not letting it die down. So.
Ugh, what a gross situation. God, I hope I never.
So anyway, didn't mean to get off track of that. But
Pirates of the Caribbean. You got to talk about Johnny Depp when you talk about Pirates of Caribbean. Of
course. And so, you know, Sirius seems, you know, oblivious to the fact that Dumbledore's arrived and he's battling with Bellatrix, and Bellatrix hits him with some sort of spell that is red, because the killing curse is green. It's not red, but the red curse hits him with enough force that he falls back into the, you know, fancy schmancy ancient archway with the veil.
Yeah, which she's pretty psyched about this. She Harry heard Bella's.
And from what, you know, Lupin seems to say, like, everyone else, like the adults, seem to understand what this archway, that this is the archway of death.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is in the Department of Mysteries where everything they do is super secret. So I'm just, I guess I'm surprised how common this knowledge seems to be, and only Harry doesn't know it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess,
because I think you would want to, like, keep it of all the things you do in the Department of Mystery, like playing with time, maybe playing with memory, with brains, or, like, maybe communicating with aliens, with the planets. I feel like you would kind of want to keep it on the DL that you had an archway of death.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, yes, yes, I would agree. And Lupin is like, he's gone. Harry does not believe it. And
yeah, we can like, still reach him. There's nothing you can do, Harry, nothing. He's gone. So again, just play it moment by moment when you know, read that bit, that last page.
So I say this sometimes because I'm like, did I miss something? I think this is one time when I went back and read something to say, you know, did I read that right? Like, at first I thought it was, you know, sometimes I'm like reading and I saw the L and I thought my brain wrote in Lucius. And I was like, well, he's just being a dick. And then I was like, no, it was Lupin. And then I up into the next chapter, which I was like, man, I was so grateful that we didn't stop on this chapter this week, because I was going to be like, that's going to drive me crazy. So I was still a little, I'm still very much of show me the body.
We're in the stage one of denial.
Maybe that's it. But I'm pretty sure he's a goner, which really sucks because he meant a lot to Harry. So.
Yeah. So Harry's yelling, he's not dead. He's not dead. And, you know, he's crying for Sirius. And, you know, he heard people just whispering before. And it's like, you know, Sirius, who was standing feet from them, was not, you know, Sirius would do anything for Harry. And he's like, so if Sirius was not going to emerge basically Harry realizes that if Sirius isn't coming when he hears me like screaming as though my life depends on it, then the only reason he's not coming because he can't.
Right. This whole veil thing is very curious. I need to know more about it.
Indeed. And so Lupin is trying to pull Harry away from the dais, and Neville's like, Harry, I'm really sorry. Was that man, was Sirius Black a friend of yours?
Yeah, and Harry just kind of nods, so.
Yep, and, you know, Harry catches a glimpse of Bellatrix that she's running away, and he breaks free of Lupin's grift and just tears after her.
Harry is like, he's got murder on his mind. He is ready to kill her. And I was like, I feel like before I read what I was reading, I was like, I could see that happening. Like, I could see his hurt just coming out. It's so, you know, in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so he's chasing her out, going running past everyone. And he goes to the room with the blue flames with candelabras and the doors swing around. And finally, he's like, where's the exit? And all he had to do was ask. And then it opens. Like, they were like, oh my God, this is so complicated. But they should have just asked.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes life lesson right there.
Mm-hmm. And so he chases her all the way up to the atrium and ducks behind the big fountain with all the statues of, you know, the witch, wizard, centaur and everything.
Yeah.
And Bellatrix is taunting him in her little, you know, baby voice. Oh, did you love him, little baby Potter?
Ugh, gross.
And Harry decides to try an unforgivable curse.
I'm curious about the repercussions of this, but I mean, it is Bellatrix, so she sucks.
Yeah, Bellatrix screamed. The spell had knocked her off her feet, but she did not writhe and shriek with pain as Neville had. She was already on her feet again, breathless, but no longer laughing. Never used an unforgivable curse before, have you, boy? She yelled. She had abandoned her baby voice now. You need to mean them, Potter. You need to really want to cause pain to enjoy it. Righteous anger won't hurt me for long.
Okay, I have a question about this.
Yeah.
So... So he used an unforgivable curse, which I realized that, but he didn't, like, there was the element of him having to mean it that, you know.
Again, like, certain spells are fueled by specific emotions. A Patronus charm, you need to think of something happy, you know. For Occlumency, you need to be very calm and very zen.
Yeah.
You know. For the torturing curse, it is clearly its source of power is not even revenge or retribution in any capacity. It is just complete and unadulterated sadism.
Okay. Well, the thing that I don't know if I knew that, or if I did and I forgot it, because it's probably not something that they would. First of all, you're not going to teach anybody how to do it.
No.
Unforgivable curse. I mean.
Moody, quote unquote, did, but
he
yeah.
He did.
It was a little unorthodox.
Yeah, and it wasn't like, so now you need to do exactly this. It was kind of like he was just kind of showing them the result.
And even
so confused about all that.
And the only thing he tried on them was the Imperius curse. Like, it's not like, okay, now we're moving on to the torturing curse.
Right, now we're going to torture some kids. Thank God, what's his name? Can't use any of these. Oh my God. I can't. The janitor guy. Shit. I can't remember his name. I see his image.
Filch?
Yes. Filch. Oh my God. I got web design
when
on.
When you
mine,
said so. Janitor, a lot of like, do you remember the show Danny Phantom?
I do not. No, I do not.
Well, it's about this kid who has ghosty powers. And so he hunts ghosts. And there's this one reoccurring ghost that just, he's like, I am the box ghost. And he just haunts boxes.
Oh.
And he's just like a throwaway reoccurring character. And it's just like, yeah, but no, the janitor, caretaker, Filch, that's technically his title.
Okay, caretaker. Yeah, that's nice.
Yep. And so... So she's like, you can't win against me. Like, give me the prophecy and I may spare your life. And Harry's just like, tough cookies. The prophecy's gone.
Yeah. And
she's like, the fuck did you just say?
Yeah. She does not believe. First of all, everybody thinks he's like screwing with him. And he's like, no, for sure. It's gone.
Yeah,
and she's pissed.
And she's and she's terrified.
Right. Because this is like Voldemort told her. Get the damn prophecy, and she failed.
I guess it's just the interesting dynamic of, like, why do these how do these people get close to and think that, oh, joining up with this tyrant is a good idea? Are any of the Death Eaters happy? Like,
that's
given Voldemort's leadership style, or, you know... Are any of Putin's generals who were too cowardly to tell Putin the truth that this will be a shit show if you try to invade Ukraine and give him real intelligence and just saying what he wanted to hear?
That's a great question, because I've kind of wondered why the allegiance to Voldemort as well. And I guess I don't understand it. It's not like Bellatrix has like family she's protecting, you know, so that can be kind of a hook. I don't know.
I guess it's again, how much is it balancing that, yeah, he's not the best manager, but he is giving me what I want in pure blood supremacy. So, like, you know, I'll tolerate it. You know, there are some people, you know, who are not like crazy conservatives, but moderate conservatives who take that sort of Machiavellian view of Trump, that it's like, I hate the guy on a personal level and he's a scum bucket, but at least he's pushing the policies I want.
Yeah. I don't know. I would not be on Team Voldemort. I
know, yeah. That. So, because it's not even, it seems, Bellatrix is so loyal to him and so like, defends him so so passionately. And it's not even any of that gives her any special like treatment or protection from Voldemort's wrath if she screws up.
Right. No. And it's not like he's like hot. Sorry. It's like, I don't know. Sometimes that's a thing. It's like, you know, they're like in love with this guy. And, you know, you don't get that impression. She's not in love with him in a romantic sense, maybe in a, like a lust for power sense. But
yeah. Yes. Yeah. As far as we know. But anyway, so Harry's like laughing at how terrified she is. And it's like, you know, don't waste your breath. He can't hear you from here. And there's a cold voice that says, can't I, Potter?
Ugh. Voldemort, here he comes. The big man for the big show, right?
Yep. So you smash my prophecy. No, Bella, he is not lying. I see the truth looking at me from within his worthless mind.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And be quiet, Bella. Do you think I've entered the Ministry of Magic to hear your sniveling apologies? But Master, he is here. He is below. Did you know what she meant by that?
No.
Well, she just meant like Dumbledore is here.
Oh, okay. Okay. I would probably thought too deep into it. Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about in Goblet of Fire with the whole crazy ass cult ritual cauldron thingy and how much of a drama queen Voldemort was in toying with Harry. But in this point, he's actually pretty smart and he's just like, I have nothing more to say to you. I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. Which that to point out, like he says looking at me from within his worthless mind. I'm like, that's just not true. You know, not that I'm like defending Harry, but Voldemort, obviously he's like a, you know, bee in his bonnet more than if he was so worthless, he would have got rid of him a long time ago.
Yeah.
But now we can't get the prophecy for him. So screw him. Avacadabra, and nothing happens.
And one of the statues comes to life and shields Harry from the killing curse. And Voldemort staring around and then he breathes Dumbledore.
Hell yeah. And then their guitars, electric, like metal guitars start playing.
Oh my God. And Dumbledore is just like, it was foolish to come here, Tom. The Aurors are on their way. It's like, oh, like Dumbledore throwing the shade with the calling him Tom.
You and I have kind of like a familiarity with a certain breed of professional that I remember many a meeting where they would not call each other doctor. They would call each other like John. It was, you know, if you were Dr. Z, it would be like, oh, John. So I thought that was pretty. I was like, look at you, Dumbledore. Calling him Tom, like,
oh, I remember there was this one woman, she had a doctorate, but she was not like a faculty member, she wasn't even an adjunct, like she was totally, but she would always try to insert herself in like the flagship business and clearly wanted to be involved in some way. And I said like Miss or Mrs. or I left a note for her and it's like, oh, Miss whatever, you know, sorry I couldn't make it, blah blah blah, and then she crossed it out and put doctor, and I'm just, oh, like, God. I know it's a very, especially with women, like, is the fact of, you know, they go through a long time, you know, to get their doctorate. They should be referred as doctor. But it's like, you know, I don't know you from Adam. Like, how should I know that you have a doctorate?
Right. Yeah. I mean,
like, I guess, like, again, if it's someone in your workplace who's repeatedly, like, doesn't want to acknowledge you as a doctor in a professional like setting, but it's just like, again, this person again was trying clearly to wanting to quote unquote help the program in some way, but she would be such a bitch about it.
Yeah, it's just, it's funny the people that get defensive about those type of things and the people that don't. And I've had many discussions of the different professions and
yeah, like, because honestly, whether I was a medical doctor or a or again, if I ever choose to get a PhD in literature, linguistics, like I don't think I would be that gung-ho about, like, I, as funny, I would have people say, you can, if you must, you can call me Dr. Amy. Like, you know, I would not need the validation of people constantly telling me, oh, Dr. Sophia Mayer.
That's because you are like a secure person. I think some people are just like very fragile. And so I think that's why it makes it so cool that Dumbledore is like, you know, it was foolish for you to come here tonight, Tom. So I just thought, I don't know.
It's an interesting dynamic because I feel like if I was the protagonist of this series and I had gone through what Harry gone through, at least from the book two onwards, where we know about Voldemort's past and who he used to be, like, honestly, in my spitefulness, I would be more like Dumbledore and I'd be like, screw this, this French pseudonym that he came up with himself. I'm calling him Tom because he's just a shitbag.
Absolutely. That is exactly. That's why it's such a good moment there, because he's like, I'm not buying into your bullshit. You're Tom Riddle. Like, whatever. You're just an idiot.
Again, you're just a little Tommy with daddy issues.
Yeah. Even though you were kind of hot. I don't know. Anyway.
Well, he was at one point.
Yes.
And so the Aurors are on their way, by which time I shall be gone and you dead, spat Voldemort. He sent another killing curse at Dumbledore, but missed, instead hitting the security guard's desk with burst into flames.
Yeah, this is pretty crazy. This gets pretty crazy.
Yeah, Dumbledore flicked his own wand. The force of the spell that emanated from it was such that Harry, though shielded from his guard, felt his hair stand on end as it passed, and this time Voldemort was forced to conjure a shining silver shield out of thin air to deflect it. The spell, whatever it was, caused no visible damage to the shield, though a deep gong-like note reverberated from it, an oddly chilling sound. You do not seek to kill me, Dumbledore called Voldemort, his scarlet eyes narrowed over the top of the shield. Above such brutality, are you? We both know that there are other ways of destroying a man, Tom, said Dumbledore calmly, continuing to walk towards Voldemort as though he had not a fear in the world, as though nothing had happened to interrupt his stroll down the hall.
I love it. I love the confidence of this man.
Yeah, merely taking your life would not satisfy me, I admit. There is nothing worse than death, Dumbledore, snarled Voldemort. You are quite wrong, said Dumbledore, still closing upon Voldemort and speaking as lightly as though they were discussing the matter over drinks.
Love it.
Yeah. Indeed, your failure to understand that there are things much worse than death has always been your greatest weakness.
As usual, smartest man in the room, Mr. Albus Dumbledore. Yeah.
Another jet of green light and does not hit Dumbledore, but Fox comes down and takes it. But because he's a phoenix, he just kind of topples over and is like a baby again.
He gets an electric guitar intro too, because Fox is great. That's pretty badass of Fox.
I don't know. I kind of want some like dramatic, like Lord of the Rings elvish choir for Phoenix.
There we go.
For Fox.
I like that too. And like this beautiful beam of light. I think we're setting up a great scene, I think.
Yep. And they get to and then Dumbledore brandishes his wand in a fluid movement. The snake bursts into flame. Dumbledore shoots flames at Voldemort. Voldemort turns it into a snake. Snake goes up in smoke. Dumbledore traps Voldemort in a sphere of water.
Crazy.
And then finally it seems that Voldemort has disappeared. Bellatrix is screaming master. And Harry's about to get up and Dumbledore's like, do not move.
Yeah.
And then when the creature spoke, it used Harry's mouth so that in his agony, he felt his jaw move. Kill me now, Dumbledore. If death is nothing, Dumbledore, kill the boy.
This was wild. I was like, what is going on
here? So a little like demonic possession.
Yeah.
Some exorcism shit.
Oh, God. So crazy.
And Harry's like, just let him kill us, the pain will stop and I'll see Sirius. And then, for whatever reason, Voldemort relinquishes his hold on Harry.
Yeah, we don't really know why.
We don't quite understand why. And Harry kind of comes around, Dumbledore's leaning over him, atrium's full of people, and of course, blumbering fudge.
Yeah, of course, we gotta bring this ding-dong into the situation, but whatevs.
Yep, and he saw for himself Voldemort grab Bellatrix and disapparate.
Yeah. So this nonsense that they're trying to kind of like, this little game they're trying to play, he has seen it with his own eyes at this point, finally.
And Dumbledore is like over it and he's like, Cornelius, I am ready to fight your men and win again. But a few minutes ago, you saw proof with your very own eyes that I've been telling you for the truth for a year. Lord Voldemort has returned. You have been chasing the wrong men for 12 months and it's time you listen to sense.
Yes, I just, the period on the end of the sentence, Mr. Dumbledore.
Yeah, the exclamation point.
Yes.
And he's like, I'll give you half an hour of my time tonight, but first I need to get Harry back to school. And he just takes the head of one of the statues and makes it a portkey.
Which then doesn't, Fudge flips out about this.
Yeah, and he's like, now see here, Dumbledore, you haven't got authorization for that portkey. You can't just do things right in front of the Minister of Magic. Like,
I wish somebody should be like, bigger fish, man, bigger fish. And then they could just leave. Like, good God, man, focus.
Yeah, it's, yeah. So you will give the order to remove Dolores Umbridge from Hogwarts. And he's Thank God, if you have any questions, you can address them to Headmaster of Hogwarts because I'm taking my job back, bitch.
More electric guitar.
And yeah, Harry cannot find any satisfaction or vindication in any of this. And he is just left to be spirited away by the portkey.
Yeah, he has had a rough
It's been a rough night.
Very rough night.
Because yeah, it's probably at least been over 12 hours.
Oh my God. And then I had to stop reading. So
yeah. So again, any, you know, before we get into our exercises, any just thoughts about all of that? Because it was a lot.
It was a lot. And it was like, I guess that's kind of what Harry Potter do, right? Like sometimes it's all this just culmination of everything happens very quickly. Yeah. And, you know, part of me just still doesn't believe that Sirius is gone. So
habeas corpus.
I just learned about it, y'all. I just learned about it. So give me some time to grieve, everybody.
Oh. Yeah. Again, this was the first book that I waited for and read. And Sirius was very much a favorite of mine as a kid. And so when I read that, I was like, what?
Oh my God. Were you just like gutted? Like,
I was so pissed.
You were, yeah.
And I was thinking even then, it's like, if you must kill him because he has to lose his like father figure, at least wait till book 7. You had the whole third book was devoted to Sirius and you just kill him off. And you just kill him off 2 books later.
That is like, that was in the scheme of things, it was a very quick like character. I think that's why I didn't think he was a goner, you know, for a while. I was like, well, we just kind of got to know him and so did Harry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, just the shitty poetic justice that Harry, by wanting to save him, led Sirius to his doom.
Yeah. Ugh. God, so many of those little things in there, right? With, like, Neville and his feeling his parents' pain.
Yeah.
Good chapters, though. I mean, it was good.
Yeah, usually, you know, I'm usually not that, when I reread, like, I love reading the beginnings and the like middles of, like, I'm not that, because I know what happens and so I don't feel like the action, because to me Harry's more about the drama, and I don't even mean the teen drama, just like, you know, the general drama of this crazy ass society, which mirrors our own. But yeah, I was like, yeah, this is intense.
Yeah, it was very I just was trying to imagine myself in that, the, you know, Department of Mysteries and all the chaos going around.
Because, you know, at least compared to the climax of Goblet of Fire, not that Harry, you know, had to force some energy to escape the graveyard and whatnot, but very much Harry was just a passive observer to the situation happening, whereas he's much more active in, like, fighting the bad guys.
He's very much a player in this part. So.
So let us get in to Gothic Geek Out. Many things to choose from.
Yeah, and I think I feel like we may pick the same thing. Maybe I'm totally wrong, but the veil. to me was the most gothic thing.
Ah, yes, the veil. Because again, to me, the veil has a very like Stonehenge-y vibe where it's this primordial, like, you know, we don't know where it comes from. Probably the British took it from somewhere else because they take everything.
Yeah, because that's just, you know, what they're want to,
yeah,
do.
Like when my husband was in London, he went obviously to the, you know, the famous museum, and you know, obviously everything is there except maybe British stuff because they just went and stole everything.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, the veil, certainly having a physical manifestation of death in that way, it's an interesting dynamic to bring another physical manifestation of death in the series when we already have Ghost.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
And, you know, certainly I doubt it's, nothing's coming to my head immediately, but having a physical, you know, gateway to death, you know, I'm sure has shown up in various forms within literature. I'm just not thinking of any at the very moment.
Yeah. I was thinking, Game of Thrones, the eye thing in the, oh gosh, the kid, what is that called? Where they drop the people into the sea.
Oh, the moon door?
Yes, the moon door. That's,
well, it's not dropping them to sea, it's just dropping them into sky because they're that high up.
Oh my God. Okay. I forget.
So they just thrown into the sky, and, you know, because they're up in the mountains, and then they just, you know, go squish.
And they fall to their death, much like Mr. Black, I guess.
Yes. Well,
very much a bummer, but very gothic-y. And it's, it makes me think of the woman in black. I don't know. Just the veil. Veil itself is kind of a creepy, and it makes me think of Crimson Peak.
It's on Netflix or Amazon Prime. And so I have the ability to watch it. I still need to get into that. And it's like her husband is played by Loki.
I know. And there's many reasons to watch it, even if you're just a Tom Hiddleston fan. Like,
I'm not even Tom Hiddleston because I don't watch any of the Marvel shit, so I don't give a shit about Loki.
I just, if you are, I just like to the gothic romance, but there is a...
And the girl is the Jane Eyre girl, right? Yeah, the one she did with Michael Fassbender, whoever.
Yeah, Michael Fassbender. And then Jessica Chastain can do no wrong. So she's amazing in that. Yeah.
So my gothic geek out, I tended to veer towards Bellatrix. Specifically her as just a kind of psychotic character in the sense that a lot of the subcategories of gothic subplots that I really like is meeting like the murderess or the mad woman in the insane asylum, whether it's a detective or a psychiatrist, and then like the story being told in flashback and trying to ascertain whether she really killed them or not, or whether someone else murdered them, or if something supernatural was going on.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah. And again, just, and also that sense of, you know, it just happens to be that it's like none of the other Death Eaters are like psychotic in that way. Why is the woman the quote unquote hysterical one?
Okay, so you made me think of a question, and it might be addressed later. Lucius's wife, she is not a Death Eater.
She is she supports her husband and the pureblood beliefs, but she doesn't have the tattoo. So she's not officially a Death Eater in the inner circle, like the way her husband is.
That was the only kind of person that kind of was in that.
Yeah, but and that, and you know, and Narcissa Malfoy is Bellatrix's sister.
Oh, okay.
So Lucius is like this crazy ass witch that I have to control as my sister-in-law.
Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Bellatrix, I don't think we've seen the last of her, so.
Certainly not. And again, I wasn't really thinking about this earlier, but just right now, again, the little, you know, mind control and possession and exorcism, like the exorcism of Harry Potter.
Oh my God. That was pretty wild. I don't know.
Again, typically don't go for that type of horror, but the exorcism of Emily Rose, like the way she jumps out the window, goes into the stable and starts speaking all like Latin and all the other languages. And then the horse start rearing and screaming.
Yeah. That was a creepy movie.
Yeah. And but that was, it was so badass.
It was good. And, I remember seeing that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I was both horrified, but I'm like, awesome, because again, I ride horses, and so because horses can always tell when something's going, when something's wrong.
I want to ride a horse. That's gonna be. I'm trying to figure out how to go ride a horse.
So. Yeah, I had to. I was taking my doggy out, like in my childhood, out for his business, and my mother's horse was completely like going crazy in her stall, and like, I'm like, why do I feel like there's a cougar beyond the shadows? I'm gonna go back inside.
Oh wow. Oh man. Yeah.
Yeah, because she was freaking out about something, and I'm just like, if she's freaking out, then I should be freaking out.
Yeah. The animals, they know. They know.
They do know. So yeah, and all right. Again, we could department mysteries, so many things we could go, but we would be here forever.
Yeah. It in and of itself is very
good. Like, I'm sure there are other podcasts, like probably Mugglecast with MuggleNet, that like go specifically into the nitty-gritties of the Department of Mysteries. But awesome. So we can move on to Tarot of the Day. And I only just finished reading the chapters for this, you know, by the time we start recording. So I am picking a card out right now. Death.
Whoa, how spot on. Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Did we already do the death card, or maybe the devil card? No, I was at a lakeside picnic for Memorial Day, and as an icebreaker with some of the people I didn't know, I was doing tarot cards, and one of the girls' cards was death, so that's why I recognize it. But yeah, death.
Pretty spot on, so perfect.
Yeah, death in the physical death of Sirius Black, and then, you know, because traditionally it's obviously such a cliche to interpret it as a literal death, but more often than not, it means like the end of a cycle or a possible sort of purging. It doesn't have to be physical death, despite the intimidating, one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse with the skeleton on the pale horse.
Right. The death card always freaks people out when it shows up in a reading, but mm-hmm. It could mean a lot of things.
I just realized something, like, for listeners who obviously are not seeing the camera here, but the death card in the traditional Rider Wilder deck, which Jess was gracious enough to gift me for my birthday last year, on the flag he's carrying, the little banner, it is a white rose, and the white rose was the symbol of the Yorks, which was the ended up being the losing side of War of the Roses. And the Yorks are obviously their counterpart in Game of Thrones are the Starks, and we all know how a lot of the Starks end up.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
I forget the exact time period of when these were developed, but I wonder if that is a genuine, like, you know, sticking it to throwing shade at the Yorks as being the losing side of the people who died, and that's why they're on the death card.
It might be. I don't really know a lot about. I know I read about the history of the Rider Waite deck, but interesting.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah, Sirius death. I don't think we.
Yeah, Sirius death is pretty, and it's pretty major.
And again, with that comes the death of Harry's innocence.
Yeah.
Losing the one father figure he had.
Ugh.
Yeah. Some people will like to consider, like, Hagrid a father figure. Honestly, I consider Hagrid a more maternal figure. And not just in the fact that he bakes, like, them cakes and shit. Like, it's just his, I feel like his demeanor is more nurturing, because in the same way he nurtures animals.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I always, yeah. So Hagrid has always had a more, like, feminine, matriarchal vibe.
Yeah, I agree. Never thought about it, but I agree.
Alrighty then. And then we move on to the, you know, Black Moon Astrology. I'm shuffling. Scorpio.
Very good compliment to the death card.
Sirius is a Scorpio.
Well, it's like you're a witch or something.
Yeah, I am.
I know. That's pretty cool. Pretty spot on. Okay, sweet.
Well, again, as we know, we are both rising Scorpios, right?
Yes, we are. Yeah.
Yes, we are both rising Scorpios. I think I've pulled Scorpio before in one of the episodes.
I think you have.
Yeah, maybe. Like, you know, if I remember that I pulled it, I will pick another one. But I think, again, because Sirius is, in fact, a Scorpio, I'm okay with keeping it, even though we've done it before.
I think it's a great card and very applicable. And like I said, complementary to Death. I know that all the Zodiac has like a complementary tarot card. And I don't remember, I think Death or the Devil. I don't remember.
Possibly. Yeah. Because, you know, Scorpios can get a bad rep, you know, as being like super mysterious, but also maybe not the most morally sound Zodiac. But, and what my personal experience is again, because my relationship with Scorpios, as I've mentioned, is more fraught because it's my opposite. And so, like, all my exes were Scorpio men, but when it comes to Scorpio women, I get along with them very well. Like, so Scorpio in the feminine form, I like very much, but Scorpio in the masculine form, I'm just like...
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Sorry. I don't know why that happened. I had quit that app. I'm married to a Scorpio. I like Scorpio.
But you're a Cancer. You're a water yes. sign. You can deal with it better. But I am a stubborn Earth sign.
It is my Scorpios are definitely Cancer's complement. Just like Capricorn is my opposite. So Capricorn is the devil card, I think. Anyway, sorry, I'm very fixated okay. on that.
Right now. on the corresponding cards.
Yes.
And then, you know, with Scorpios again, Sirius does. Unfortunately, you know, he was probably, as we saw from he was one of those like womanizing characters. So Sirius very much exemplifies the type of, you know, unfortunate reality where, you know, obviously from Harry's point of view, we only ever see Sirius in a paternal light, as, you know, as a good person and always my father's best friend. But, you know, if I was just, you know, maybe if I was another member of the Order of the Phoenix and I took a look at Sirius and he would probably be hitting on me and I would just be like, oh, it's one of these douchebags.
Oh God, 20-year-old me would probably eat that up. That's fine.
Yeah. Well, again, if I was 20-year-old me being a member of the Order of Phoenix, yes, I would have eaten that up. And then I'd be like, damn you, Scorpios, all my exes are Scorpios. But 30-year-old me is just like, meh.
Yeah. I don't have time for that. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. So any more thoughts with Scorpio?
No, I mean, the Scorpio, the mystery, you know, Scorpios are often considered very mysterious. Oh,
well, the only thing I'm thinking of is that, you know, Voldemort, his sun sign is Capricorn, but his moon sign is Scorpio.
Well, he's just a whole lot of darkness, isn't he?
Yeah, lot of darkness. Because, yeah, again, because it's an earth sign, I can kind of get the, yeah, of all the earth signs, Capricorn has the worst reputation as possibly being, like, meaner. Like, Taurus, we're just stubborn. Virgos are just analytical. But Capricorns are the ambitious ones, and that can translate to being cutthroat and mean.
Yeah, and that's why I get so sensitive about them, because they're my opposite as a Cancer.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty then, and then we move on to our final exercise. Fan fiction time!
What was my fan fiction for this? Mine was pretty, I asked, what if Dumbledore had not shown up?
Ooh, what if Dumbledore had not shown up? Well, I think we're supposed to be led to believe that the only reason Harry does not follow Sirius's instructions, like, to get out of there is because Dumbledore, like, burst in. So I'm presuming that, you know, he was trying to follow Sirius's order. And so I guess it's a question of, if Dumbledore didn't show up, then Harry would have started to, you know, leave, maybe with Neville, but would he have fully left without all his friends, all the teenagers at least? I don't know. And because in the fight, I think before Dumbledore shows up, Moody is knocked out.
Right.
Tonks is knocked out.
Yes.
And, you know, Lupin, and I think even Kingsley is still at it, but he's clearly injured.
Right.
And then Lupin and Sirius. So who knows? Maybe more of them would have died.
I think that for sure more of them would have died. I feel like that if Dumbledore, you know, Harry wouldn't have had that moment of like, oh, things are going to be
okay. I guess there's the question of where Dumbledore was, because if he didn't show up with the other order members, then clearly he wasn't at headquarters. So what sneaky shit was he doing?
Yeah. And maybe he was doing something, you know, maybe he could have been orchestrating something in the...
Like, he could have been orchestrating, like, something else. But, again, where was he doing? Like, where, like, there's wide gaps in The Hobbit where Gandalf goes off and does his own thing, which are explained in the appendixes. But, yeah, but for a while, it's like, we don't know. He just pops back up again.
He just in and out, doing good stuff when he needs to. Yeah. That's kind of all I had. I mean, I feel like there was, I'm not going to say what if Sirius didn't die. But.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. What if Sirius, Sirius did not, you know, go through the veil? How would have things panned out then?
I feel like Bellatrix would have died. Like, I feel like there we would not have a Bellatrix Lestrange after this chapter.
Yeah, it's because, I don't know, like, not that Bellatrix isn't a horrible person who deserves death, but we get the sense of, especially Sirius taunting her, like, he's more, not that he, like, really cares at this point because he's been estranged from his family for so long. Like, he doesn't have, like, the sort of personal vendetta against her, like, the way he has with Wormtail or, oh, yeah, like, Snape. So it's, like, so I guess it's the question of, like, would Sirius be prompted in a duel to literally just kill her and be done with it, or just subdue her?
Yeah, I kind of think that, I mean, just, I almost feel like it's like, you tried to kill me, I'm going to kill you back.
Yeah, but like, possibly. But also, and I'm thinking, again, the fanfic put me wants to be like, if he didn't die and things, but there was still the fight with Voldemort and Dumbledore, and, you know, in Dumbledore basically ordering Fudge what to do, and it's like, oh, and you will also, like, clear the name of Sirius Black, who is right here, and then Sirius would go on and start to have his own life again.
That would be lovely.
And Harry would move in with him,
and then, yeah, that would be lovely. And that's actually kind of depressing to think about, like, the happiness that could have been. But
yeah,
what was your fan fiction?
That, well, I just told you.
You, that was it? Okay. I was going to say, I was like, oh, man. Yeah. No, I said that, I was like, oh, I bet Amy.
I'm just trying to think.
You love Sirius, right?
I do. I'm not as passionately crazy about him as I was as a kid. I do grant more leniency than maybe some members of the fandom do, because what can we expect when he's in this state of arrested development? Of right. Being in prison for 20 years, so we can't expect, really, is it fair to expect him to act his age?
Yeah.
You know, again, like, it's like with, again, balancing societal problems with personal agency. How much personal agency can you assign to someone in poverty who just doesn't know what they don't know?
Right, right. I don't know. I like Sirius. He was a cool guy. The romance author in me had other situations for Sirius and Bellatrix, like... What if they were, like, in love? Or what if they fell in love?
Even if they were first cousins?
Hey, yeah. It happens.
Well, yep. Queen Victoria was Queen Victoria's husband, the love of her life, and always wore black after he died. That he was her first cousin.
I forgot about that as I said it. But anyway, you know, I don't think that is very far from some fan fiction that I have seen, so.
Yeah,
I have kittens at my feet. I just don't.
Oh, are they cute?
Yeah, I don't know where they went though. It's always dangerous when I'm in this chair.
No. Alrighty then, and that concludes the tumultuous chapters of 35 and 36. Tune in next time where we will read the conclusions of the final two chapters, chapters 37 and 38, The Lost Prophecy and The Second War Begins.
Oh my gosh.
Dun, dun, dun. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. that was the Sophia Meyer Studios podcast.